Thank you to Kyle for the invitation and to attend this very interesting meeting. So I'm going to tell you about two studies that we have undertaken in the past couple of years to attempt to reverse synaptic dysfunction as well as aberrant behaviors in mouse models of autism spectrum disorder by targeting translational control modules. So the first set of studies I'm going to tell you today focus on Fragile X syndrome. For those of you who aren't aware, this is an X-linked disorder. It's caused by the loss of expression of FMRP, the Fragile X mental retardation protein. This is caused by transcriptional silencing of the FMR1 gene. And we became interested in Fragile X syndrome a number of years ago because we were studying translational control in the context of synaptic plasticity and memory. And we're interested because FMRP is an mRNA binding protein that can be found both in soma and dendrites. And in particularly interesting, it's believed that FMRP suppresses translation of its target mRNAs by stalling them on polysomes. But also, FMRP may suppress general translation via interaction with translation initiation factors. Now, FMR1 null mice, which are the standard Fragile X syndrome model, have been studied extensively, and I'll just highlight a couple of the phenotypes which we will be discussing. One is that there's aberrant spine morphology, both in the mice as well as individuals with Fragile X syndrome. And in particular, these spines tend to be more immature, so they're filopodia-like and less stubby mushroom-like. Synaptic plasticity has been studied extensively, and what's interesting is that there are not a lot of plasticity phenotypes that have been described. The best described one is in the hippocampus, where these mice exhibit exaggerated metabotropic glutamate receptor-dependent long-term depression, or mGlur-LTD. And what's interesting about this is that this form of LTD was shown by Kim Huber and Mark Baer a number of years ago to be protein synthesis dependent. So based on that finding, the mGluR theory was posited by Mark and Kim and Steve Warren, suggesting that exaggerated mGluR-dependent protein synthesis might underlie synaptic and behavioral phenotypes associated with Fragile X. However, as I think you'll see, this is much more complicated than that. For example, it's been shown by my lab as well as Kim Huber's lab that the exaggerated mGluR-LTD in these mice is actually protein synthesis independent. And as we'll see, there are other complications with this hypothesis. The mice also display a range of abnormal behaviors, some of which are consistent with individuals with Fragile X syndrome and other autism spectrum disorders. Okay, so what about this idea that mGluR-dependent protein synthesis maybe exaggerate and underlie the phenotypes? What's the evidence for that? The first evidence that was consistent with this was provided by in vivo studies from Carolyn Beebe Smith using Fragile X syndrome model mice, where she was labeling newly synthesized proteins with a radio-labeled isotope. I think this is an isoleucine. And this is a wild-type mouse. This is a Fragile X mouse. And areas of red and yellow are areas of high protein synthesis, and the cold colors, blue, are areas of low protein synthesis. And I think you can see that there's a rather consistent increase in general protein synthesis of around 20%, not only in the hippocampus, but also in the cortex. And I think this was very surprising to people at the time because it's been estimated that the number of FMRP target mRNAs is around 800 or 900. So it's hard to imagine that this can account for this robust of an increase in total protein synthesis. And then subsequently, Mark Baer's lab, this is a study done by Gould Dolan, showed in hippocampal slices labeled with S35 labeled methionine that there again is around a 20% increase in protein synthesis. And this increase could be abrogated if you cross the Fragile X mice with mice that lack one copy of mGluR5. So basal protein synthesis is elevated and appears to be mGluR-dependent. Our contribution to this idea was studies done by Ling-Fei Ho, a former postdoc in my lab, And she was looking at FMRP targets and how they were regulated following LTD, both in wild type and fragile X model mice. And when she induced LTD, you could see rapid increases in the expression of targets like MAP1B, shown here, in wild-type mice. And interestingly, in slices from the fragile X mice, you can see there's already exaggerated levels of MAP1B, but when you induce LTD in these animals, there's no further increase. So we would agree that there's increased basal protein synthesis in the fragile X mice, but that protein synthesis is actually decoupled from normal mGluR-dependent regulation of the pathway. So what's responsible for this increase in basal protein synthesis? We've studied this signaling pathway for a number of years in the nervous system, and you heard about it yesterday. This is mTOR1, TORC1 signaling pathway. So this is mammalian target of rapamycin, which is a kinase that, when it's in complex with raptor, forms mTORC1, and it has two substrates that can control protein synthesis. One is 4E binding proteins that normally bind to and sequester the cap binding protein EIF4E. So when mTOR phosphorylates 4EBP, its affinity for 4E is decreased, and it permits 4E to interact with another large scaffolding molecule, EIF4G. And this type of control of translation is thought to be quite important for messages that have complicated 5' UTRs, because as part of this initiation complex, it also contains EIF4A, which is a dead box helicase. So you can imagine that that helicase can unwind the superstructure in the 5' UTR of complicated structures that would permit the ribosome to find the start codons so that translation initiation can begin. mTORC1 also phosphorylates P70S6 kinase, or S6K1, which has multiple substrates involved in translation, including FMRP itself, ribosomal protein S6, and EIF4B. And interestingly, when S6K1 phosphorylates EIF4B, it stimulates the helicase activity of EIF4A. So either wing of this pathway can result in upregulation of this type of translational control. Rapamycin, which you heard about yesterday, can disrupt this signaling. This is not a kinase inhibitor per se, rather it binds to a prolyl isomerase FKBB12, and in this complex it disrupts the interaction of mTOR with raptor, preventing it from phosphorylating its substrates. So we were interested in understanding whether, or determining whether, this pathway was upregulated in the fragile X mice, and we were particularly interested in this because, as you heard yesterday, it's now known that mutations in negative regulators of a number of molecules of this cascade give rise to developmental disorders, many of which fall on the autism spectrum. So Chuck Hofer in my lab, in collaboration with Suzanne Zukin's lab, asked whether this pathway was upregulated in the hippocampus of fragile X model mice. And to summarize a lot of data, the answer is yes. So you can see that there's increased phosphorylation of 4EBP, increased phosphorylation of S6K1, and importantly, there's increased formation of the initiation complex. That is, there's increased binding of EIF4E to 4G, so if you compare these lanes to these lanes. So it does appear that mTORC1 signaling is upregulated in the fragile X mice. And based on that, Aditi Bhattacharya, a very talented postdoc who's currently in my lab, decided to ask whether this particular node of control could be targeted to alleviate synaptic and behavioral phenotypes in the fragile X model mice. So what Aditi did was very simple. She took global constitutive S6K1 knockout mice and crossed them with fragile X syndrome model mice and asked whether synaptic and behavioral phenotypes could be corrected in the fragile X model mice. And we picked this module first because we had studied these mice a number of years ago, and although they do have themselves several synaptic plasticity phenotypes as well as some behavioral phenotypes, they don't seem to overlap with those of the fragile X mice. So what Aditi found was that in the fragile X Motomyces is on the hippocampus. You can see that there's increased phosphorylation of ribosomal protein S6 as well as EIF4B, two of the substrates of S6K1, and these increases are returned to wild-type levels with the genetic removal of S6K1. Using the sunset technique to measure protein synthesis, we confirmed the previous findings from Smith and Baer and other labs that there's around a 20% increase in protein synthesis in the Fragile X mice, and this increase can be returned to wild-type levels by genetic removal of S6K1. So what about the dendritic morphology phenotype? We, like others, observed an increase in spine density in the Fragile X mice, and this increase in spine density could be returned to wild-type levels by the removal of S6K1. And then likewise, we saw an increase in filopodia-like dendritic spines in the Fragile X mice and a decrease in stubby mushroom-like spines. And these changes, again, could be abrogated by the genetic removal of S6K1. I don't have time to show you, but the exaggerated mGluR-LTD that we and others have observed in these mice is also corrected by this type of genetic manipulation. So what about the behavior? So we focused our studies mainly on behaviors that might be considered relevant to the disorder, and one of them would be behavioral inflexibility. And the way we measure this is to look at reversal learning in a water-based Y maze. So in this task, the mouse has to find a hidden platform in one arm of the maze based on spatial cues in the wall. So after multiple trials on day one, once the mouse reads criteria, we take it back to its home cage, let it stay overnight, and then the next day come back and ask if it remembers that, it, in this case, it has to go to this arm to get out of the water. And if it does remember that, then we immediately switch the platform location to the other arm. And ask how long does it take the mouse to now take this new information that the platform has been moved from here to here to reverse their learning. And so when we do this task, you can see that all four genotypes learn this task just fine, and they remember this task just fine. But you can see that the Fragile X model mice, although they can do this task, it takes them many more trials to do this type of reversal learning. And this impairment reversal learning is returned to wild type like levels with the genetic removal of S6K1. We did a behavioral battery of tests, and almost all of the cognitive abnormalities displayed by the Fragile X mice could be reversed by when S6K1 was removed. Interestingly, increased locomotor activity and repetitive behaviors could not be corrected by this type of manipulation, and that's something I'd like you to keep in mind for the remainder of the talk. So taken together with these other observations, we think these data are consistent with the idea that perhaps exaggerated protein synthesis is involved in at least a subset of these types of disorders that fall on the autism spectrum. Now, since this session is called reversibility, this type of manipulation that I just told you about is not one that you're likely to do in humans, so we had been searching many years for S6 kinase inhibitors, and there were none available until about 2010. When Pfizer reported a compound called PF4708671, or PF, and so they kindly provided us a boatload of this compound. And the nice thing about this compound is that it's fairly easy to work with. You can inject it IP, it gets across the blood-brain barrier. It will inhibit the phosphorylation of S6 kinase substrates without impacting the phosphorylation of molecules that are upstream of S6K1 in that signaling, in this signaling cascade. And I don't have the time to tell you about all of Aditi's work on this, but I'll just tell you that the behavioral phenotypes that could be corrected by the genetic reduction of S6K1 can also be reversed by IP, chronic IP injections of the PF compound. So this is a social novelty phenotype that the Fragile X mice display. It's reversed by these types of injections. And I think most promising to us is that the phenotypes that could not be corrected by the genetic manipulation that I discussed also are not corrected by the chronic injections of this inhibitor. So these kind of repetitive behaviors were not corrected by this manipulation. So this data, I think, is suggestive, again, of exaggerated protein synthesis may underlie a wide range of phenotypes in these various disorders that fall on the autism spectrum. However, I would caution that there's one complication to this, and that is that it's known, this is the more complicated version of this type of signaling, and this is a signaling pathway that's under very tight homeostatic control, so that when the signaling cascade is upregulated, typically you get downregulation of upstream signaling. And likewise, with chronic inhibition of the cascade, you often get upregulation of the upstream signaling. So it's possible that the manipulations that I told you about are acting kind of secondarily in that they're restoring this kind of signaling and therefore restoring the protein synthesis. So it would be an indirect way of restoring the normal translational homeostasis. So we wanted to ask more directly whether exaggerated translation could give rise to autistic phenotypes. And we were already began working on this when a number of papers were published that suggested that EIF4E itself may be mutations in the EIF4E may be involved in autism spectrum disorder. So here's the evidence. There are genetic variants in chromosome 4Q, which contain the EIF4E locus that are associated with autism. And the paper that caught our eye is that there was a rare single nucleotide polymorphism that was identified in autistic families, two separate families that were associated with increased promoter activity in the EIF4E gene. And the supposition in this paper was that these individuals had increased expression of EIF4E, but I would tell you that they never demonstrated that, and I've yet to see whether or not that this is the case. In addition, microdeletions in this region of chromosome 15 contain the CYFIP gene, which has been studied by Joe Buxbaum and others. And for us, this is very interesting because this encodes a non-canonical EIF4E binding protein. This has been shown by Claudia Bonnie's lab, so that when you remove CYFIP1, you get increased 4E4G interactions. I mentioned that Fragile X syndrome mice have increased EIF4E4G interactions. We've shown this as well as Kim Huber's lab. And Joe Buxbaum's lab has shown that mice that lack a copy of CYFIP1 have a number of phenotypes that are similar to Fragile X syndrome mice. So based on these studies, we began to study mice that overexpress EIF4E. And these are studies that were done by Emanuela Santini, a very talented postdoc in my lab, in collaboration with David Ruggiero, who generated the mice. And I apologize for the busyness of this slide, but I just wanted to point out that there's around a 30 to 40% increase in the expression of EIF4E in most brain regions of these mice. This doesn't seem to impact the expression of other translation factors. And interestingly, it appears that all of the increased 4E that's expressed is associated with EIF4G, which is part of that initiation complex that I told you about, and it's not associated with the repressor 4EBP, and we think that this is probably because under normal conditions 4EBP, 4E is already saturated. Using Sunset in vivo, we were able to see that there was increased protein synthesis in these mice. This is actually in the striatum. I want to point out one thing is that this profile of increased synthesis of protein seems to be somewhat different than the Fragile X mice in that it's not across the board increases, but rather there seem to be discrete increases in specific proteins. So what about the behavior of these mice? So of course one type of autistic-like behavior is repetitive behavior. So we often measure this by studying marble-bearing behavior. So you just have 30 marbles in the cage, and mice like to dig and bury the marbles. And you can see that these mice, within the 30-minute period, bury almost all the marbles within 15 minutes. So much more faster than their wild-type litter mates. And here I'll show you a movie that this is sped up, of course, so you don't have to watch it for 30 minutes. But I think you can pick out rather easily the transgenic mice versus the wild-type mouse. So within 15 minutes, you can see that the transgenic mice here and here have buried almost all the marbles compared to the wild-type litter mate. These mice also exhibit excessive grooming behavior. In some cases, they barber almost all the hair off their face. And these mice also display behavioral inflexibility as measured on the Y-maze that I discussed before. So the mice can learn and remember this task just fine, but their reversal learning is impaired compared to their wild-type litter mates. I should also mention these mice have other phenotypes consistent with behavioral inflexibility, so they don't extinguish auditory fear memory, and they also have social behavioral deficits. Okay, so what about the synaptic abnormalities in these mice? So you heard Dan Geschwin talk yesterday about cortical connectivity with various brain regions, and we thought for both these repetitive behaviors and this behavioral flexibility, one synapse that we should look at is cortical striatal synapses. And so Emanuela looked at a form of plasticity in these animals at that synapse that's a form of long-term depression that can be induced by high-frequency stimulation. We picked this type of plasticity because, one, it's mGluR dependent, and also it's protein synthesis dependent, so it mimics the type of LTD in some ways that we have already studied in the hippocampus. And in fact, when you look at LTD under these conditions at the cortical striatal synapses, you can see that in the 4E transgenic mice that there's a robust increase in the magnitude of LTD compared to their wild-type litter mates. Okay, so again, this is a session on reversibility. So we wanted to know two things. One, of course, can you reverse these phenotypes in the adult animals? And second, if you specifically target 4E, can you reverse the phenotypes? Because we think that this would go to really proving the idea that exaggerated translation is causal for the synaptic and behavioral phenotypes. Unfortunately, we had begun a collaboration a number of years ago with Gerhard Wagner's group, who had identified a compound termed 4EGI1 that seems to specifically disrupt the interaction with EIF4E with 4G, which, when this occurs, it pushes EIF4E back to its repressors, 4E binding proteins, as well as CYFIP. So Emanuela first asked whether this compound could reverse the LTD phenotype. So she used a dose that did not seem to have an impact on LTD in wild-type slices shown here, but at this particular dose, you can see that this exaggerated mGluR LTD is brought back to wild-type levels as shown here. So what about the behavioral studies? So these were quite heroic experiments. This compound is not easy to work with. It's very hydrophobic. You have to mess around with it with the MSO to get it into solution. And Emanuela had to do a lot of dose response curves in order to see whether ICV infusions could be used to disrupt this interaction in vivo. But she found a dose and a regimen that could disrupt this interaction with EIF4E with 4G. And so what she did was that she took both wild type and the 4E transgenic mice and infused the drug once a day for 5 days and then examined the marble-bearing behavior that I just told you about. And you can see that in the transgenic animals, there's no impact on after the first 2 days of infusions. After the third day, you can start to see some effect, and it's significant by days 4 and 5. And so here I'll show you the movie. And here's a transgenic mouse treated, treated with the drug, and here's two transgenic mice treated with vehicle. And I think you can see quite clearly that that repetitive behavior is reversed. And the nice thing about this is that when she stops the infusions, by about 2 or 3 days later, this repetitive behavior actually comes back. She then took the mice after the 5 days and asked whether the behavioral inflexibility could be reversed. And again, in this water-based Y maze, the reversal learning could be improved by these infusions of 4-EGI-1. So we're very excited about this because I think this goes to show that at least there's hope for some of these disorders where there's upregulated translation initiation via upregulation is complex, and there's a lot of interest in this type of signaling by Big Pharma, not for autism, but actually for cancer. So there's a lot of compounds coming online, and we have access to a number of them right now, and we're testing them to see which ones are best for delivery and specificity, et cetera. And we think this is important not only for various types of disorders that fall on the autism spectrum, but all these other disorders in which there's been report of upregulated mTORC1 signaling. So with that, I'll stop and thank the people again that did the work, Aditi and Emanuela, who are both really terrific postdocs and will be on the job market this fall. Unfortunately for me, they're two of the best people that I've ever had in my lab. I'd like to thank all of my collaborators, especially David Ruggiero and Philippe Pierre, and then the people that fund our work, and I'll stop there. Thank you.
One question. There are many compounds that work on the mGluR pathway, and I see the ones that you're working with are farther down the pathway. So what is the advantage of it? And also, you know, there are many compounds that really work in mice, but in humans they don't have the same effects. So what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, we specifically picked, we're a translational control lab, so we're much more interested in the nitty-gritty of the translational control than the upstream signaling. And I think we picked that because, of course, all those upstream molecules have other substrates that are involved in other aspects of neuronal function independent of translation. So we thought we would target things specifically that impacted translation. And the second reason we picked those nodes is because each one of those manipulations is likely to result in a different translational profile. And so what we're currently doing is trying to figure out in the nervous system if you inhibit EIF4E or S6K1, what types of transcripts are prevented from being translated, and how does that map with the 4E transgenic mice, the fragile X model mice, et cetera. So I think we'll be able to more specifically target various aspects of synaptic and behavioral dysfunction by understanding the details of the translational dysregulation. Yes, Thomas. I don't recall whether mGluR5 antagonists altered the hyperactivity. That's a good question. I would point out one of the things that's interesting I didn't have time to tell you is that we find in the fragile X mice, the S6K1 inhibition doesn't seem to impact the repetitive behavior and hyperactivity, but the 4-EGI one compound does. So again, and that's a different brain area probably with a different mode of dysregulated translation. And so we're very keen on understanding what are the transcripts that whose translation is regulated by that mode of control in the striatum.
Did you see any immune responses to either of the two drugs that you gave?
So with the 4 EGI, they were infused directly into the brain. The S6K1 inhibitor is going to be an inhibitor. There's some advantages to using it, but I think chronic treatment, one would have to be very careful. That drug, we don't know about immune responses, but it does actually work on some of the peripheral phenotypes in the Fragile X mice, so macroorchidism, which has been observed in both the mouse model as well as the humans with Fragile X, is corrected by both the genetic manipulation and by the drug. However, it does appear that that PF compound does cause some kind of skin irritation of some sort, and so that's something to keep in mind. We haven't studied this in great detail, but we do notice it. And the other thing I should mention is the chronic regimen does seem to make wild-type mice a little bit hypoactive.
One last one. So I was wondering, actually, if you might be able to comment on, you know, your SSK rescue of the FMRP mice as compared to Mark Baer's recent report of the TSC also rescuing the FMRP mice.
Yeah. So that's a very interesting question. And, of course, it's something we've thought about a lot. So, I think in each case, if I were to go back, for all these disorders, it's one really has to look and see whether there's altered protein synthesis in each of the models. So I think in the TSC world, most people assume that protein synthesis would be upregulated in those animals, but that doesn't appear to be the case. But I would say that there's unpublished data from Ray Kelleher's lab that suggests that the reason the protein synthesis is decreased in the TSC mice is because it provokes a stress response. So there's an unfolded protein response that involves another initiation factor, EIF2-alpha, and this is what perhaps results in the decrease in protein synthesis. So I think it depends on model to model. And I think, in my view, our results are not really, I think they're actually in agreement with Mark's results.